Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Now, our next guest, Bookstore, reopened yesterday as retail restrictions eased across the country, allowing all retail shops to reopen for the first time since December. And on the line now to tell us more, we have Dougie Hobson of Footprints Christian Bookstore in Dunleary, County Dublin. How are you keeping, Dougie?
I'm absolutely great, and it's just so wonderful to be back. We had a great day yesterday. Our first day to be open since Christmas Eve, would you believe? We shut the door on Christmas Eve, and our first day back after the Christmas was yesterday.
Happy days. How does it feel? Are you over the moon about it?
Oh, totally. Absolutely over the moon. And we had a great day yesterday, customers coming into us on the phone. We've had, a number of text messages, emails. So it's very encouraging, actually. Very encouraging to be so warmly welcomed back.
That's absolutely brilliant. It's absolutely magic, Dougie. And I have to say, even though I'd say you're elated now, I'd say it's been a really tough few months for retail businesses across the country. What's that been like for you personally and for the shop?
Well, we literally ceased trading. We stopped trading on Christmas Eve, and no income. So it's been a challenging few months. But I'm delighted to say that myself and my wife, we're fine, and God definitely provided for us, and because I know there are others much worse off than we are. So what I say to you is, yes, it's been challenging, but very grateful to say that we've survived it and have survived it well.
That's brilliant. Well done. I really admire your faith and your positive attitude towards it. It's brilliant. So looking forward now, what are your hopes for the summer months ahead? Is there any big plans?
Yeah, well, what I am hoping, and I think a lot of small businesses and bigger Irish businesses are hoping, that we will get local support. That folk, instead of, going on the internet, buying from the big names, will support their local bookshop. And there's lots of us throughout the country. And the other thing is that we can order anything in. If we don't have something in stock, we can order it in. There's absolutely no problem there. And the other thing is, we can post worldwide. So we can give a really good service. Now, the one thing which I don't have is a website. I actually don't have a website, but I'm contactable by phone and by email and through Facebook as well. So I'm easily contactable.
Brilliant. And I suppose on that, you guys would have access to lots of books that you might not find elsewhere. And are there any new book releases maybe that you'd recommend?
Yeah, well, I tell you, there's two books that, when we closed up on Christmas Eve, were our number one sellers in the shop. The first one is From Killing Fields to Fields of Life, which is Trevor Stevenson's story of, he started up Fields of Life many years ago, which is an organisation that does amazing work in East Africa. And they do whole loads of different projects. Their website is so interesting to go on and see, people that are very vulnerable and marginalised, they support with education programmes, health programmes, and they've a lot going on. So this is Trevor's story, where he began. Today he's the honorary president of Fields of Life, and it's a really good read, and it's an inspirational book. And the second one is Free at Last, which is the story of Asia BB, which, she hit the headlines in 2010 in Pakistan. She shared a glass of water with Muslim women, and she, being a Christian, the Islamic Republic of Pakistan, they threatened to hang her, and she was on a charge of blasphemy. So I'm sure if you're a regular listener to Spirit Radio, you would have heard David Turner and Church in Chains since 2010, highlighting her story. And then she got acquitted in 2019, and she's now reunited with her family, and is living in the West. So these are two powerful, inspirational books. Brilliant. And two true stories.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Dougie, for talking to us. And if people want to get in contact with you, they can go on web.
You'll get me on Facebook, and I just can't think of my telephone number off the top of my head.
But if
you go onto Facebook, Footprints Christian Bookstore, Dunleary, all the information's on that.
Spirit. The Holiday Doctor on Spirit Radio is brought to you by InsureMyHoliday.ie. Wherever you go worldwide, it's got to be InsureMyHoliday.ie.
Now, it's great to have intercounty travel and cross-country travel resuming. And from the 2nd of June, holiday rentals, hotels and B&Bs will reopen. And on the line to tell us his staycation advice for the summer holidays, we have travel doctor Joe Supple. How are you keeping, Joe?
Good morning, Donal, and good morning to your listeners.
Thank you very, very much. First of all, Joe, most of the population looking to staycation in Ireland, what advice do you have for where to start planning a staycation?
Yeah, look, I mean, the general thing is, I'm hearing from a lot of people that prices are quite inflated. And I suppose we have to take into consideration, you know, how long they've been closed for and how much, you know, the season they've actually lost. Hopefully as well, the weather will get better. But there's still some really good deals to be got out there. And I know friends who have booked like Airbnbs and things like that, or even just go down to the bed and breakfast route as well, is one of the good options. You will find that a lot of the family hotels, the well-established ones, which we would all sort of know around the country, that they're full. So it's the same as booking a flight. You get your flight for 100 quid. I pay 300 because obviously it's down to, you know, how much occupancy like the hotels have. And again, they're going to have to go through this whole procedure in relation to be COVID ready as well, you know, in relation to sanitation and stuff like that. So there's a lot of expenses on hotels. I know they're very excited about opening up. And you will get good deals in some of the cities as well. Like I was saying before, some of the high-end hotels in Dublin, like, you know, the West and the Westbury, where they're very dependent on the American market.
Sure.
So you will get sort of good deals there, whereas you might have been paying, you know, quite a large price during the summertime because obviously, you know, they would have groups coming in. That's not happening this year, as we know. So if you were looking at a nice city break in Dublin, maybe we worth spending the extra few bob and going for something a little bit premium.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. And I'd say prices, you know, for Americans going over sometimes might be a bit inflated themselves. So you might actually be able to get those bargains. And where can you look for these bargains, Joe? Is it Airbnb predominantly, or are there other places?
Well, there is Airbnb, but generally people, you can look online as well with like hotels.com or some of those generic websites. Mm. I mean, one of my top tips is look online, and if you see something there and it's like, you know, a basic room and you're happy with the price you see on bookings, ring the hotel directly. Mm. You know, they're paying a percentage back to, you know, to the, back to booking.com or any of the other websites as well. So if you ring the hotel directly and say, look, I'm looking at this price here, I'm happy to book it, any chance of an upgrade or maybe stick breakfast in, you know, yourself when you're booking something abroad or whatever, you know, you get your different packages, whether it's bed and breakfast, half board. So ring the hotel directly, and I'm sure they'll be able to match it for you, and maybe even a nice upgrade, you know, which is always nice in a hotel. So,
definitely.
But there's plenty of different resources there as well. And of course, you know, there's also the options there. The glamping has become very popular, I was talking about there before. And it can be quite reasonable. And there's some beautiful places to go. I mean, we have some stunning hotspots. Hopefully, when the weather improves a little bit, you know, we get a nice summer that people can just head off and and travel around, or even maybe, you know, stay maybe a couple of days in one place and then move to another part of the country. I think we all have to sort of get it that we're going to be sort of staycationing for this summer, you know, obviously with the announcements over the last couple of days.
And Joe's like something that myself, as a procrastinator, can definitely say is that I'm a little afraid now that I won't be able to find a last minute deal. Or am I in luck? Will I be able to find something for my summer?
Well, you will, absolutely, yeah. I mean, like, you know, there will be cancellations as well, you know, which happens anyway, you know, for staycations. You will get lit windows there as well. And this, as I said, there's some really, really good resources there. Dream Ireland is another very good website, dreamireland.ie. And they have loads of properties which they represent around the country. So you can go in there, put in your parameters of what you want to pay, what area, what dates you're looking at. And then it brings up a whole ream of stuff. Same way as buying a car online, you know. You actually put in exactly what you want, and they will come up with a host of different options for you as well.
Fantastic.
And of course, look, hopefully, you know, Northern Ireland as well is another option for people who maybe have never experienced that. And I think we found over the last, you know, 14, 15 months that people are going, and it's a really good opportunity as well for people. You know, we have such beautiful tourist places in Ireland that we wouldn't even think about going in the summertime because you would have such an influx of tourists coming over. And this is a great opportunity to go to places which will be a lot quieter and actually get to experience all the stuff, the historic stuff that we have in Ireland.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Joe, for talking to us today.
The Holiday Doctor on Spirit Radio is brought to you by InsureMyHoliday.ie. Wherever you go worldwide, it's got to be InsureMyHoliday.ie. Spirit.
Now, food production and the variety of foods available to us today is totally different to that of our grandparents' diets. And if we think back a few generations ago, there were no ovens, microwaves, or even fridges or freezers. So what did their diet look like? And was their diet healthier than ours today? And on the line to tell us more, we have nutritional therapist Alexandra Dobbs. First of all, Alex, what we eat today compare with our grandparents?
Yeah, it's really, really, really interesting. This was research done in Australia, in Cairns. And the researchers there just looked at, they actually did carbon analysis of hair and nails to see how, you know, we can see, can we find out what people ate or what they didn't eat. And we just found out that it was, that was staggering to see that 100 years ago, when, you know, before the advent of industrial farming, when we thought people would have had a very simple lifestyle and, you know, they didn't live very long maybe, or they might have been malnourished, but they actually ate a greater variety of foods than we eat now. So industrial farming, the importance there is that all of a sudden we could produce a lot more food, so that meant food security for most, you know, for many, many people. Mm. And that's why we now have, you know, we don't struggle with finding food, in especially in the Western world. It's also helped a lot of the developing world. But it has reduced the variety. So we eat one type of wheat. We live on corn, and we make a lot of foods from corn. Sugar is a huge ingredient in a lot of meals. You know, we're really reducing the crops that we use for our bodies.
And I guess there's the old diet seems to be now, surprisingly to some people, more diverse than it is now. Which is better for our health, Alex?
It's sort of twofold, the answer. In a way, I think it's definitely better to have food security. So industrial farming has done a huge amount for us, and that's been absolutely, you know, paramount. But at the same time, you know, we don't eat the kind of, you know, we only eat one cup of courgettes. There are so many courgettes, you know, it's one of the foods that we eat a lot of, or broccoli. There's so many varieties of broccoli that maybe flower at certain times of the year or whatever. But because supermarkets need a certain type of food at any one time or at all the time in the year, we're so limited. So I think it would be much better if we, you know, if we could increase variety in our diets again. And studies show that our gut health, our microbiome, actually improves with eating more variety. In fact, we should eat 50 different plant foods every week. I mean,
wow.
Neither of us, I think no one listening will achieve that anyway. And I certainly have never achieved that. So that just shows how limited we are, despite having food security.
Mm, that's really interesting. Wow, that's great. And I guess the question is, how do we implement this? What can we take from diets in previous generations, and how do we implement it into our own, do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I think one of the things we can eat these days, or we can do these days, is just think, how did people eat back then? What might my grandmother cooked for me? You know, just think back a little bit, or buy a cookbook with traditional meals. I love Doreena Allen's, I think it's called The Forgotten Techniques of Cooking. It's a big green cookbook, and it's got all the sort of old stews and things in it. And to think of, you know, when you go to the supermarket, try not to just buy processed foods. Mm. Try to buy fresh vegetables, because even though there's a limited variety, it's really important to eat them. Increase your intake of maybe different meats or fish that you might normally eat. Put nuts and seeds with your breakfast. And also, I think it's really important, and that's sort of a trend that's been increasing in recent years, is don't cut out entire food groups, because then you're limiting even more. Mm. And they found that vegetarians and vegans would, you know, obviously they eat even less variety of foods than we eat these days, which includes meat and animal and fish, all those products. So I think maybe try even growing your own. Put a window box, put a few herbs in a window box. Pop a bit of broccoli into your garden. You don't have to have a vegetable garden. You can pop it in with your flowers. You know, a few lettuces, anything like that.
Yeah, be a bit of fun as well. And I guess the next question I would have, how is today's wealth of food options and processed meals and sugar, etc., how do these contribute to the health issues that we hear so much about, like obesity and undernourishment?
Yeah, that's again, a really important point, because while we recognise that industrial farming has given us food security, which is obviously paramount, we're sort of tipped over the edge now, where we find obesity, diabetes type 2, hypertension, or just plain overweight. You know, they've increased. And also, we know we're overfed but undernourished. So we're relying on things like wheat and corn, sugar, to make most of the meals that we eat. So I think, again, try to go towards, exercise. You know, do go out, and it's exercise doing gardening in your own garden. Mm. Maybe grow the odd, I don't know, a few carrots or whatever yourself. If you don't like doing that, that's fine. You go to a local farmer's market and see what local people are growing, because there's a lot of seed exchanges and people grow different plants locally. So you would increase your variety there. Likewise, if you don't eat fish normally, try to find a fishmonger or try to find a fish van. Where I live, we have this fish van that comes every Thursday and Friday. Just see what they have on offer in the week and cook a fresh meal with it.
Brilliant. That was nutritional therapist Alexander Dobbs from Grassroots Nutrition. And you can go to her website at www.grassrootsnutrition.ie.
Spirit.
Now today, the Cabinet is meeting to be briefed on the cyber attack that has impacted the health services and has disrupted thousands of medical appointments amongst government and patients' fears that private health information could be leaked by the cyber criminals. So what could happen to our stolen medical data in the HSE ransomware hack? And on the line to tell us more, we have Adrian Weckler, tech editor at the Irish Independent. First of all, Adrian, what's the latest news on this HSE cyber attack?
Well, the latest is that they're trying to figure out whether or not sensitive patient data has actually been leaked on the dark web. There have been some suggestions in some areas of the dark web that it is floating around, but that is not yet verified. And both the HSE, the Gardaí, National Cyber Security Centre, Department of Health and others are now monitoring that. Don't forget that the ransomware gang, the hackers, have said they will share that information. They say they have stolen sensitive patient data. So that's, as well as the concern about disrupted appointments, disrupted treatment, and the cost of restoring the IT system, that is also now a key focus of concern.
So are we effectively assuming that they do have access to our medical data?
Kind of have to.
Okay.
That because they... in a lot of other instances where they've done this, they've done the exact same thing in other countries. In the US, in February, they attacked a couple of hospitals in Texas and Florida and did more or less exactly the same thing. And in that case, they did share quite a bit of the data. So we have to assume that we still don't know whether, A, for sure they have the data, and B, whether they have shared it. But we have to assume that they do, and they will.
We have to assume it. And what types of medical data now that are we assuming that they have access to?
You have to assume that that's going to include patient records, maybe procedures, appointments, accounts information, maybe things like PPS numbers, addresses, names. Maybe not for everybody who's ever interacted with the HSE. It might just be... people who have interacted with it over the last 6 months or so. That's purely speculation on my part, because again, details are very scant in terms of what is actually known. But if this data is shared online, it could be, there could be a lot of sensitive information there. I mean, we saw last month where on a much less serious scale, but it gave you a flavour. Facebook's a lot of mobile phone numbers, 1.3 million Irish mobile phone numbers, against our full names and against, where we live and in some cases what we do, were leaked online, and that document's floating around now. So anybody who wants to, find out the mobile number of a guard or a barrister or a judge or a prison officer or a women's refuge man can now do it by just going online. So that was a real mild flavour, I think, of what we might see here.
So we've been hearing a lot about the word ransom and ransomware. And will the government and the HSE, are they likely to pay it?
No. I mean, it's unlikely. I mean, there was a time where they may have. And if you look at how most businesses react to this, a lot of them consider it 1 in 4 actually do pay it. And the reason they pay it is because they just do a quick back of the envelope a bit of arithmetic, the amount of time and cost it would take to rebuild everything versus the amount of time and cost it takes to pay the ransom, which is usually a couple of €100,000, but in this case it's likely to be more. It's likely to be, you know, 5, 10, maybe 20 million euro. However, the state is a different entity. It can't really do that because, A, it's being seen to give in to criminals. B, it's funding crime if it does that. If it pays the ransom, why wouldn't another ransomware gang come along and do the same thing?
Sure, sure. And if Adrian, if these medical records were leaked, where would they be leaked?
They likely on the dark web. The dark web, for people who don't know it, is a huge part of the internet that you can't get to by, you know, from Google or from your web browser. You have to go through sort of special tunnels to get there, and that's where a lot of criminal activity takes place. It's also where a lot of legitimate kind of underground freedom fighting activity takes place, but that's where a lot of, you know, drugs, weapons, illegal material bought and sold, that's where it's likely to be dumped first. That's typically what happens.
Okay. And is there a way to solve this attack, Adrian? Who's working on it? Who's behind the scenes?
Well, it's a combination of the resources we have, which are pretty thin. We have an organization called the National Cybersecurity Center, and that has about 20 people, doesn't have anyone really leading it. You've got divisions of the guards that would be involved there. You've got, you know, a couple of IT managers in the HSE, Department of Health, and then you have the specialist cybersecurity firms like FireEye, which is an American company which has a big office down in Cork. They will be heavily involved in this. So it will be a combination of agencies. The people who will be going in and surgically looking at the computers will be FireEye and Mandiant. And then they would report to our civil authorities.
I guess going forward as well, Adrian, a lot of people might be slightly worried that some more Irish systems might be prone to attack. Is this the case?
Yes, it is. I mean, the ransomware is one of the two big destructive malware viruses that is hitting kind of Irish society and European and Western society in general at the moment, because it's very profitable. I mean, as I said before, 1 in 4 businesses pay the ransom. That's an incredibly successful hit rate for the criminals. So I don't think this is going to ebb away anytime soon. I think that we probably will need to refocus on cybersecurity and how best to protect stuff. Like, the big companies tend to do that anyway. The Microsoft, Apple's, Facebook's, Google's, all these big companies that are here, they have fantastic resources, and they're on this fully.
Yeah.
It's smaller businesses and ordinary people in their homes who will be a lot more vulnerable.
And finally, Adrian, for those sitting at home wondering what to do, the individual, is it ultimately out of our control?
Well, there are some things you can do. I mean, if you're sitting at home and you listen to this and you, say, run a home business, one of the key things is just to keep backups of everything. So if you did get hit in the worst case scenario, everything was locked up or wiped, you would have backups. Now, that's easier said than done. People will make maybe a backup once a month, or they'll have a hard drive and they mean to do it, but they don't get around to it. The other thing you should do, as a matter of course anyway, and this is quite hard sometimes, try to be more aware of dodgy-looking emails, particularly emails, sometimes text, but mainly emails. Sometimes we are all aware of the dodgy, hokey-looking banking phishing emails that say, oh, you know, hey customer,
sure,
you know, you need to click this link for an important reason. We know about those, but some of them are very, very effective now. Some of them are to pretend that they're kind of, oh, you've got a package that we're holding, DHL, you need to click this link, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just try and be aware of that. That's a prime way they get into your system.
Adrian Weckler, tech editor at the Irish Independent, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.